Welcome to Radio Labyrinth Presents. I am your host, Steph Swain. And to those of you who listen to our regular weekly podcast, you know the only thing that I'm more passionate about than TV and movies are dogs. I talk about it endlessly. I know it drives you guys crazy sometimes, but we do have a lot of listeners who love them. And specifically, the animal rescue community is very close and dear to my heart. And today, not only will I be talking to one of my greatest mentors, Miss Lori McDormand Cronin. Later on in this episode, I'll also be talking to Shane Hawkins, a participant in the Jail Dogs program that benefited from so much, it completely turned his life around. But first, if you live in the Metro Atlanta area, you may recognize my next guest from the myriad of appearances she's done on Fox 5 Atlanta's adoption segment. Or, you know, maybe you adopted a dog from her in the past, or a cat, that's possible. Or maybe she took you to jail one time. That's also possible. But who knows? But everyone should know this person. And without further ado, I would like to welcome U.S. military veteran, former canine officer, mentor, top volunteer with the Gwinnett Jail Dogs program, and one of my personal heroes, Lori McDormand Cronin.
Thank you. That was a big to-do there.
I know you never talk about yourself. You're so humble. No. And you really are like such an amazing person. The things that you've done and accomplished, and no one would ever know it because they surely wouldn't hear it from you. And so that we should let the world know more about you and what you do. But first, before we get into all the things that you've done, I don't really get to talk to you that much. Anytime I see you, it's at an event or something and you're so busy. I've always wanted to know this. How did you cultivate your love of animals? Where did this start with you?
When I was younger, I just was one of these people that I always went to animals before I did people. So I think I just loved them since then. Even when I was a young kid, my mom would be like, go out and play with your friends. I'd be like, yeah, I'm pretty all right with the house dog. So.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I wanted to know, when you became a canine officer, were you a regular police officer for a while first?
So I started in the military. I was 18 when I went into the military, and I don't know if I ever told you the story, but when I went into the military, I wasn't ready for college. So my mom said, find something you can do that will get you out here into the world. So when you come back out, you have a job. And I was like, all right. So of course I went to my recruiter, being young and dumb and knowing nothing about the military, and told them this. And he goes, we have the perfect job for you. He goes, it's a multi-purpose job. You'll go in, you'll learn computer skills. So I was like, great. So I signed up, I went, and not honestly until I got off the bus at Fort McClellan, Alabama, did I know I was becoming a military police officer. So when I got off the bus, it was literally my 18th birthday that day. And I was like, what did I do? But after I went through basic training and I went through my AIT school there, I got stationed in Hawaii, and that's where I fell in love with the canine. They were actually right behind our provost marshal's office, and I swore from the first day I was in there that I would eventually figure out how to become a canine officer. So that's how I got started. I literally went to school in Lackland Air Force Base for the military canine academy. I was there for my six to eight weeks, and then I went back to Hawaii. And because at that point in time, it was still considered a overseas tour, I then had to learn how to become a canine and a a drug dog. So, and because we had military police dogs, we had to learn how to care for, draw blood, all kinds of stuff on our animals. So that's where my love of becoming a veterinary technician came in.
And that's why I always wondered, like, you can always, well, we'll get to that, but you can always wrangle up any dog and clip their nails, which always blew my mind.
I try.
And is this where you became partial to the German Shepherd? Because when I met you, That was your breed. Like, you love all dogs, but that was your breed.
Those are Rottweilers, and of course now all I have is mixed mutts, but those were my babies. I think it's just because I think some of those bigger working breeds are misunderstood because people don't understand all the energy they have. And if you don't give them a job and you don't teach them at a young age, you have to then figure out, all right, how do I do this with now a 90 to 100 pound dog where I could have started with just a small puppy?
This is primarily a pop culture show. So I wanted to ask you if there were any characters on TV or in the movies when you were a kid that inspired you to be a police officer.
Again, you know, I didn't have a desire to be a police officer. My husband, he knew he wanted to be a police officer since he was like 6 years old. I wanted to either be an Olympian or I wanted to be a veterinarian. And you know, neither one of them were something that I actually started doing. I fell in love with the dogs once I got into the military. Again, I loved having them as a pet as a kid, but not till I got in the military did I learn about working with them, you know, figuring out their temperaments and things like that. So that's where I learned almost everything.
Well, when you said you wanted to be an Olympian, what sport would you have tried to medal in?
I wanted to swim or dive.
Oh, I never knew that about you. I figured you would have been a runner. I know that you like to a swimmer.
Run. Well, that was thanks to Uncle Sam. We had to do that anyway. And then I had to go to my kids' cross country meets all the time. So I figure while I'm sitting there for practice, I might as well get out there and run right there out there. So, but no, I loved diving and I loved swimming.
So you left the military. And then as soon as you got out of the military, is that when you became a police officer?
So I came home, and when I first got home, I looked into veterinary medicine because that was something I was just really picking up on and learning when I got out of the military. And I came and I worked here in a local animal hospital. But all of a sudden, I worked close enough to Lilburn Police Department that they used to bring their dogs in, and it made me miss being a police officer so much. So actually, a lot of people don't know this, I started with the Gwinnett County Jail. That's where I was. I was a deputy before I became a police officer. And I was actually a patrol dog handler or a drug dog handler for them.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
A lot of people didn't know because I swore when I left that jail, I would never go back there again. And look where I am.
So eventually, I guess you started, you left there and then you started patrolling the street with your own canine. Who was your first canine partner?
His name was Gage. He was probably Georgia. His name was Gage. He was probably about a 75 pound Rottweiler. And I will tell you, the very first time we were out on the street, we did a lot of drug interdiction. So his response was supposed to be sit, but we pulled over a cargo van, and we had opened the door. He started doing his little search, and all of a sudden he grabbed a hold of the seat and ripped open the seat, and I thought, I just bought a van. Thankfully, he found a kilo of coke under there, so we were good.
So how long were you and Gage partners?
Gage and I were partners probably for about a year. The sheriff's department was going through a whole bunch of changes. They had actually just gone from Sheriff Plunkett, which would tell you how long ago it's been. And there was a new sheriff coming in, and when he came in, they changed a little bit of everything. So that's when I left the sheriff's department, went to the police department. And at the police department, I was just a regular road officer.
Oh, okay. All right. So what were some of your most, I guess, obviously the kilo of cocaine.
Yes.
What were some of your most memorable moments from patrolling with your dog?
A lot of ours, because it was at the jail, we would do some patrolling, but it was more high-risk warrants and stuff like that. And then we would actually take the dogs through the jail to do, like, drug searches and stuff like that. So it was just things like that. I really enjoyed going out, though. I will tell you, one time we had to go to a fight, and I got out of the car. And, of course, being a smaller stature female, no one thought anything about it. But as soon as a partner, Gage, got out, they were like, oh, okay, we'll listen. So.
Well, when I met you, I was coming from Fur Kids, which is, It isn't like 100% no kill, but it's pretty close. And right. I'd never volunteered at a county shelter. And at that time, Gwinnett was forced to euthanize for space. And it was super right. sad a lot of the time. And that's changed over the last couple of years, hopefully never to return.
Yes.
But they would have lost a lot more if it weren't for your efforts and your leadership. No, seriously, they really would have. I mean, the page that you started, the videos, I mean, it was just, what led you to volunteer there?
Actually, I started volunteering at the Georgia SPCA under the tutelage of Jane Stewart, who is now with Planned Parenthood. So she got me really involved. And then I had started at our shelter because I had been involved in the county and just a lot of turmoil. As you know, working with rescues, there's a lot of drama. Mm-hmm. So I'm not drama. I'm there for the animals. So at one point in time, I had been at Gwinnett County and I left. And then I came back, and that's when we had the opportunity to do what you helped us do fantastically with, which was get out, showcase the animals. Our job was to find rescues for these animals because they weren't getting adopted out fast enough. And like you said, if they didn't get adopted or they didn't get pulled into a rescue, they were euthanized.
You were such a steady hand. I mean, your attitude was like so inspiring. It really was. And I'd be bawling my eyes out sometimes, and you were always just like a rock. You were always able to just be like, this is sad, you know, but we have to keep trying. I mean, you were always able to see the end goal. And, you know, your ability to work with so many dogs who exhibited fear-based aggression and kennel aggression and turn them around, I mean, it was amazing. And I guess that came from your canine training. You utilized all of those skills.
I will tell you, it's funny. I did do that with all of them, but I had actually adopted a puppy from the shelter. And when we got her, she was a cute little Catahoula puppy. She was fantastic. But by the time she turned about 2 years old, she became aggressive towards our German Shepherd and our other dogs. And I was like, I can't get rid of her. So what do I do to get her to mold into the family? So she, Cody, is actually the dog that got me to be more in tune with watching animals, watching their body behavior so I can interact or get in there before she did anything. So Cody's actually the one that got me where I was able to watch more of the dog's signals and signs, even more than the patrol dog handlers, because they're basically, they know their training already. But when you have a dog that you're watching just body language only, it's a lot more labor intensive to watch.
Oh, I can imagine. Who is that Boomer? Is
that Boomer? Oh, that was Luke.
Luke?
Yeah, he's up there celebrating. Him and Tucker outside the door celebrating.
Tucker, another came from Gwinnett County. I remember he had the little turned out feet.
Yes, he was born with toenails, but no toes. So his toenails grow out of the pads of his feet.
But he does great now. I mean,
he's fantastic. I have learned though. I foster failed with Boomer through the Georgia SPCA. I foster failed with Tucker through actually Canine Pet Rescue. And then I foster failed with Luke through the jail dog program. So no more fostering.
That is one of the only drawbacks to fostering, really, is sometimes you fail.
Yes, you have too.
I do. And actually, I hate to even talk about him, but one of mine that I lost a couple of years ago was there at the time. Prowler was his name. And he just became our heart and soul. And unfortunately, we lost him completely anyway. But there's like so many great animals at the shelter. It's crazy that people would actually go out and buy a dog when there's just, I mean, any dog you could want is at the shelter or in the Gwinnett Jail Dogs program, because you guys have every breed. And how did you get involved with Gwinnett Jail Dogs?
So through the working at the shelter, we used to work with Dennis Cronenfeld, who actually started the Society of Maine Friends. And Dennis would always have an adage. He said, I will take a dog into my program if it bites me And I was like, well, that's easy. So, but he was always there for the little dogs. But the jail dog program actually started out by taking dogs from the county shelter that were never going to get adopted. And even if a rescue wouldn't take it, they took it to the jail to see if the handlers could actually start working with them. A lot of times it worked. Sometimes because the jail is so much more intensive, as it has so many people there, or it echoes and it's loud, some of the dogs didn't do as well there. But that being said, that's what the jail dog program, that was with Dennis, and then at the time the sheriff, Butch Conway, they were in cahoots together and they started this program, which has been fantastic for the jail dog, for the inmates at the jail.
I mean, and since you've, I mean, I remember like when they we're adopting out a fair amount, but since you have become involved, I mean, they adopt you guys. How many dogs have you adopted out in the last year, would you say?
So when I first got there, I've been there about 3 years. We celebrated after about a month or two, we celebrated their 500 adoption. You have to realize though, at that point in time, they were just taking very hard to place dogs. They weren't taking in cute little fluffy things, puppies like we do now. So I think 500 for what they were taking was amazing. Now we're almost up to 2,000 adoptions, but it's just been, we have 18 puppies right now. So doing that wasn't something they did before. But yeah, it's been amazing. And these handlers, you know, I do training now with them. So we're training the handlers to be able to get out when they get out, to be able to go somewhere, maybe work as a trainer. I was actually at Petco the other day picking up food for one of our jail dogs. And the kid behind the register had on a mask and he kept staring at me. And I was like, I finally get up there and he pulls down his mask. He goes, Miss Lori, it's me. It was one of our handlers. So he had actually been there about 2 weeks. And he goes, because they hired me because I had the experience from the jail. And he said, eventually, I hope to be able to work with the training. So we had that. We recently had one of our handlers get out that he took his dog with him. And he's actually already started his training. You know? So it's been fantastic. Yeah.
And what is the recidivism rate for the men that participate in the jail dogs program?
I will tell you, some of my best handlers are frequent flyers, but they normally, so the guys that are in our program are usually there for drugs. We have no kind of assault, anything like that. No hard charges like that, but they're usually in there for drugs, bad checks, stuff like that. So a lot of our offenders that are in there for the narcotic aspect, when they get out and they go right back to where they were, they usually end up back into the program. That being said, they come in, they give them 2 weeks to kind of dry out, see how they're doing. They come back into the program. We work with them again and try to get them in the right direction. I don't know if you saw the other day. So the jail dogs have actually been on Pit Bulls and Parolees. They've been on one of their episodes. Oh. And they actually put out a plea. It said, if you've been in prison, please apply. And so what they're doing is they're looking for inmates, and they literally tag the Gwinnett Jail Dog Program in there. For any of these inmates, if they are in jail or if they're getting out of jail, they will fly them down to Louisiana. They will give them a 30-day kind of trial kind of thing, see how they do. If they do well, they're actually going to hire them on spot, and then they'll have a job. And for me, I think that's fantastic because it gets them out of where they are here, and it puts them somewhere else that they can start over.
What do you feel like, this is what I wanted to ask you. I thought this was a very interesting paradox, I guess, for the fact that, you know, you used to be responsible for enforcing the law and bringing a lot of these guys to jail.
Right.
What's it like to be on the other side of it now? Does it make you, has it changed you or how your views are in any kind of way now that you're inside trying to help them get out?
Well, you know, the one thing is, even as an officer putting them in, I don't think, as everybody labels them, they're bad guys. They've done things that weren't correct. And I'm hoping that through what we do now, they come in, they learn something else that they can do when they get out. I will tell you, when I worked at the jail as a deputy, and I worked in, we moved from the old jail to the new jail. I was probably in the women's unit for over a year, and I swore I would never come back to that jail because I didn't want to babysit adults. But now that I'm pretty much, so I work with them, I train with them. they're human beings. They just make mistakes. But yeah, I couldn't imagine being anywhere else. And I can't believe I'm saying that, because I wanted so bad to get out of those units. I was like, you know what? We're all adults. They should be able to take care of themselves. It makes you kind of look and see, all right, you know, maybe we don't always, maybe they don't always have some of the things that we have. As in, for them, they go right back to where they came from. So if they don't have support or something to help move them into the right direction, they'll come right back again.
And like you said, this whole thing with pit bulls and parolees, getting them out of here.
Right. Getting them out of the state, away. Yeah.
Your environment does directly influence how you become sometimes. It really does. What do you think is one of your happiest moments since you've been volunteering with the jail dogs?
I think my happiest moment actually was when this handler just left with his dog. I mean, because we're not a big fan of letting our handlers adopt their dogs. We'll let their families adopt them, because we do have a high count that turn around and come back. And I want to make sure that our dog is taken care of, even if, you know, they happen to come back to jail. So we had been in contact with his mom for over a month, and they were all excited. They are all excited. And the deputy decided to let the dog stay in the unit with him until it was time for him to leave, so he could continue working with them. But I think that was probably my happiest moment, especially getting to watch him to leave. And then when he came out of the jail, we sat and we talked a little bit, where I wasn't a volunteer, but I was another human being to him. He was like, he goes, this is something to me that, he goes, it got me from point A to point B. I can start over again. And I hope that's what he does, because he's one of our great handlers. I've got another handler that's in there. I think he's supposed to get out next month. And I brought him a new dog today, because his dog got adopted yesterday. And I brought him a new dog today. This guy never smiles. So I brought him in a puppy today. And I said, this is yours. And he's like, mine. And he starts smiling. So by the time I left, I was there 30 minutes. He was already in his room. He had the puppy. It's a puppy sitting. So to keep them doing stuff like this is fantastic.
And do the dogs, do they stay in the room with them, or they go in a separate area at nighttime?
They are in the room with them 24/7. I don't know if you had a chance, check out our Facebook page last night, but I posted one. The handler's all curled up with one of his dogs. So normally there's enough room in each room that they can put a crate in there. And we try to crate train all the dogs, because most people, when they adopt a dog, they're going to have to go to work. So we teach them how to be in a crate while they're gone. But most of the time you'll walk through, the deputies tell me at night, they'll go through and they're doing cell checks, and the dogs are curled up with the handler in bed. And so I think that's just kind of a relief for them. I had one handler, he told me that he was very thankful for the dog that he had. He got him through some hard times, and he was somebody there to listen to. And it was actually, I'm looking at your little screen thing behind you, it was Bandit. So his handler just said, he goes, it was just rough. And he goes, I had Bandit there to hang on to cry into, to talk to. He didn't talk back. He didn't get mad at me. So.
And Bandit, I mean, you guys had him for how long? 5-6 years until he finally got adopted?
I think he was there quite a while. Yeah, because he actually came to us. He was fine when he came to us, and he had an adverse reaction to a heartworm treatment, and it put him into his wheelchair. And, he got adopted 3 or 4 times before he finally found the Riders, who gave him a fantastic home for the year that he lived afterwards.
They really did. It was, yeah. I wanted to ask you, what shelters, or where do you get most of the dogs that you have in the program?
Well, most people know we are actually based. Society Humane Friends is our foster. They pull for us. So basically we get all our dogs. Chandler will say, hey, I've got a bunch of puppies up in Walker County. So we'll go up to Walker County and get them. We have pulled from Gwinnett. As you know, things are changing with the shelter. So we're hoping to get back in there with again. We do a lot with Barrow County. Trying to think who else we do. A lot of times, though, Chandler's able to find us dogs that, you know, she'll find from owner surrenders and things like that. That's why we have a gazillion puppies right now. So,
well, then that leads me into what I wanted to talk to you about. Let's talk about how bad things are right now with the mass dumping of pets. And you've been volunteering for quite a while. Is this pretty out of control compared to what you've seen over the years? Is this like more than usual?
Well, right now I can tell you, we are starting to see people are bringing their dogs back that they adopted during COVID, during the pandemic. So they're all starting to, we're too busy, we don't have time. You know, and this is stuff that we all ask when we do the adoptions. Hey, you know, is this something you're going to be able to do when you go back to work? And most of them are, yeah. I think we've only had two brought back for that. But I do know other rescues, the shelters are filling up because people have gone back to work. You know, as well as I do, July is usually the worst because of fireworks and everything. And then the school gets ready to start. They adopted a dog in the summer and now they're taking him back to the shelter. So Gwinnett is starting to fill back up again. During the pandemic, I mean, it was fantastic for all the shelters because they were, you know, animals were getting adopted left and right. There was a point in time that they didn't have any animals to adopt out. But of course, we're back to ground zero again.
Yeah.
So, but again, I think until they maybe implement some different kind of rules, I have a brother that lives in Minnesota and he is just blown away that he could, that we can go at a shelter and there's animals there. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, we went to the shelter to get a cat the other day. And he goes, the shelter could hold about 100 animals. He goes, there was three dogs and a cat. And I was like, well, why is that? And they actually have a mandate that how we used to have to pay car ad valorem tax. If you have a dog or a cat and it's spayed or neutered, you pay $5 a year. But that $5 goes back into rescue, goes back into shelters. If they're not, and you're not a mandated or state mandated breeder, you pay $500 a dog. So that's something that they've been able to help curb, you know, the overpopulation up north. As well as, you know, we have rescues sending dogs here from the south up north because they're not even dogs to adopt.
Yeah, and that's a lot of people, if you're not in this, if your page isn't full of sad dog posts from all these rescues that we follow, you don't realize how much worse it is in the south than it is most anywhere else in the country. Especially up north. Up north seems to have gotten it together. I mean, sure, their property taxes are horrible, but they've got the homeless pet thing kind of sorted out. And yeah, I mean, so do you feel like that's the best way to stop the backyard breeding?
I think so. I think a lot of times, like we were talking about earlier, we try to pull from some more rural places like Walker County because to them, it's just, hey, my dog had puppies. I have 30 puppies now. So, you know, and nobody feeds them sick. So that's why we kind of try to help those counties out even more than we have with Gwinnett recently, because they have smaller shelters and they get filled up quickly. I will tell you what I love about Walker County is, so we went up there a couple months ago and we pulled a couple, some puppies and some adult dogs. And normally we'll meet them in Cobb County so we don't have to drive all the way up to Chattanooga almost. And she said the reason they didn't meet us is because they were driving animals to New York, so they didn't have to euthanize.
Wow.
So to me, that tells me it's a small little area. It's a small little place. So I think they're trying to do everything they can. Barrow County's the same way. I mean, I adore Jackie and them over there. They're fantastic. Like I said, things are changing at Gwinnett. I really hope that we get involved with them again because, you know, it was a great thing while we were working with them.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we got, and I believe the amazing Katie Corbett is back from what I understand.
She is.
And if you're in the rescue world, you know that name, Katie Corbett. I'll probably hopefully try to get an interview with Katie at some point also.
They would do that in a heartbeat.
Well, if you could change one thing in the rescue world, if you could think of one thing that would make the greatest impact.
I will tell you, and this combines my whole police to rescue thing, is as us animal lovers, we see animals as beings. We see them as a living, breathing being that we need to be held responsible for and be responsible for. And the other aspect, and as I think a lot of people see it, it's proper, their property. So I think that maybe if we could find out and get rid of the gray line in between the middle, I think that would help. I think laws to go ahead and help with the spay and neuter is a huge thing, because I think with spay and neuter, we would get rid of some of the animal population that doesn't need to be. that's why I love the Society of Maine Friends. You know, we do the spay neuter clinic, we do the vaccine clinics, because I know it's been rough. We had a lot of people coming in, they're saying, you know, during COVID, we didn't have a job or anything, and we appreciate the fact that we can come in and get a vaccine for $10. So that you have those people out there that try everything they can to keep their animals, even during the worst of times. And then you have people that, you know, have means and are getting rid of their animals because, so it's time for me to go back to work, or,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
I get it, but.
Well, and I guess, and people off, you know, we always complain about people dumping animals at shelters, but they can still do worse things than that, as we've seen. So at least they're taking them to a shelter, because you do have to pay a surrender fee to surrender them to the shelter. And a lot of them just, you know, people that just turn them out or leave them and abandon them. So there are much worse things that you can do. How can people help out if they'd like to do something for the Gwinnett Jail Dogs program?
So our biggest thing right now is, oh my goodness, with puppies, we have an Amazon wish list, and they can, right now we go through puppy pads faster than actually the inmates. They only get like a big box of toilet paper every week, and maintenance came in and said, you guys can't have any more toilet paper. And they're like, well, what are we supposed to do? So anything that they want to hit on the Amazon wish list would be fantastic. We will, as soon as we start getting back out again, I will be recruiting you along with Loretta to come out and help with some of our offsite events. Believe me, that right now, the Amazon wish list is the hugest thing, because today I have been running around buying puppy pads all day long.
And what's that website that they would go to?
They can go to www.jaildogs.org, or you'll actually find it on our Facebook page, Gwinnett Jail Dogs.
Okay. All right. And now, before I let you go, this is a little thing that we like to do at the end.
Okay.
We do this with everybody. So let's just say it's your last day on Earth. Okay. And you get one last dessert. What is that?
One last dessert. I don't know. I'm a big, huge, it's funny. I like chocolate sometimes, but sometimes I like fruit. So let's just say chocolate covered strawberries to get it all.
Oh, okay. I mean, they have to be like from edible arrangements, like that perfect. You get to watch one last movie. What would that movie be?
My favorite movie of all time is probably A League of Their Own. I don't know why. I love baseball. I don't like baseball right now because we've been so busy, but I love baseball. So probably A League of Their Own.
That's a great movie. And that's a feel-good movie. It's a good one to leave the earth with. And,
it is.
And there's one last song playing as you exit the stage and go into the light. What's that song?
Who Let the Dogs Out? There we go.
Who Let the Dogs Out? That's perfect. Okay, well, tell us where we can go if they want to follow you and the program.
So basically, our website is just to adopt. But if you follow our Facebook page, I don't know if you've seen it recently. So we're doing a spoof on the Olympics. So we're doing the jail dog games. We have a dog on a skateboard. We have a dog on a surfboard. We just did our track and field events. We did our gymnastic events. So we're going to be doing this till, I think, August 8th is the last day of the Olympics. The handlers are having a blast doing this just because they're having to literally put their skills from where the training that they're doing. I walk in every day and they're like, Miss Lori, I gotta show you what I can do. I gotta show you what I can do, which to me is fantastic because that means they're working other than on Tuesdays on our training day. So we're having a blast.
That's awesome. Well, Lori, thank you so much again for everything that you do for the animals. It cannot be overstated how much you have done. I know that you would never tell anybody, and I'm so glad that you came on here and let me just make you talk about yourself.
I appreciate what you're doing, and I appreciate how you're bringing a light to rescue and a light to people adopting animals. I mean, it's needed.
Awesome. Well, I will see you at August 13th. You let me know, and I will be there.
All right. Thanks, Steph.
All right. Thanks, Lori.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Radio Labyrinth Presents. I am your host, Steph Swain. And earlier in this episode, I spoke to Lori McDormand Cronin, who is the volunteer extraordinaire at the Gwinnett Jail Dogs program, AKA Operation Second Chance. And Lori, she praised the handlers so much. And, you know, she couldn't do it without the handlers. They've saved so many dogs there. And right now I'm going to talk to a former handler, Mr. Shane Hawkins.
Hello. Thank you.
Hey, Shane. I'm so excited to have you on the show. And I mean, your story is, it's such a great story that I think a lot of people could relate to.
Yeah, most definitely. And I'm glad to be here. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let me ask you, so you became an inmate at Gwinnett County in, was it like 2014? Is that right?
Yes. That's when I went in and then I joined the jail dog program in 2015 and I was there from 2015 to 2018.
And now, and when you came into the jail, the program had been in existence for about 4 years at that time, right?
Yes. Yep.
And so you, I guess for like a year while you were in there, you just kind of watched this whole thing going on. At what point did you say, I want to be a part of this?
Well, I heard good things about it. And, you know, I didn't really like the place that I was in before that with all the, you know, the other people, but they said that there's a dog program on the bottom level and then you could be there and get involved with training dogs. And it's really good and all this stuff. I heard good positive things about it. So I wanted to try it out. So I went down there and the moment I went in there, I could just tell the difference of the atmosphere. I mean, it was like, this is the place I want to be. And, you know, I wanted to take full advantage over everything. You know, I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn how to train the dogs, you know, listen to everything the trainers were saying. I wanted to be able to watch the videos that were provided by the jail, read the books and get very involved with it. And, you know, that's what I did. And I enjoyed every bit of it, man. It was a great, great thing.
No, Dennis was there a lot when you were there. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. He was. And Dennis, actually, he became a really good friend of mine. You know, he would, he'd come in, he'd talk to me, he'd, you know, tell me good positive things like, thank you for, you know, going the extra mile here. I mean, he saw the difference that was being made there. And there was a trainer there, Charles, at the time too. He was the head trainer there. And, you know, everybody, you know, they were good people. And I just, you know, was able to develop and have a good relationship with everybody and, you know, stay out of trouble and just did what was right, needed to be done.
Well, what was your experience with dogs when you were growing up?
I didn't have a whole lot of experience. It was when I was younger, my neighbor had a pit bull that was very aggressive. It didn't like people. It would try to charge the fence and, you know, go after them all the time. And one day I went up there and I thought maybe I can befriend this dog and maybe get it to trust me. And I was able to, you know, I got some ice cubes from the neighbor because they told me that the dog liked ice cubes. And I went to as far as I knew that that leash would go with the dog because it was on a runner. And I sat down there and I let it do its bark and I just stayed calm. And once it started calming down, I gave it the ice cubes and I started developing trust. And I noticed something then, and it didn't really hit me till later on in life after the program and everything, that I had something that God gave me, you know, a gift that able to connect with dogs. And it was there in that program, the jail dog program, where it came alive and I was able to really, you know, connect with that.
You know, I found like a lot of people that I've met in rescue, part of why you get into it and working with dogs is because you kind of see something of yourself in these dogs, you know, like yeah. Being discarded or, you know, nobody, you didn't feel cared for or, and you just like, you want to help save them. Do you feel like that? Did you feel like that with some of the dogs that came into the program?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, there was all kind of different dogs that would come through the program, you know, and dogs had been beaten, abandoned, neglected, abused, never even had human contact before. And, you know, dogs that were rejected, you know, and I didn't have the best past, you know, growing up. And so with a lot of that like rejection stuff I was just telling you about, I was able to connect with that and know that, hey, you know, and kind of relate to them, you know, and I felt like I could get through to them and develop that trust and let them know, you know, that I'm here to help you, not harm you and stuff like that. And most definitely. So
how long did it take you to realize that training dogs was actually going to be the career path that you wanted to follow?
Well, I didn't really know until after the program. After the program, I was in there, you know, like I said, I was there for about 3 years and then I left and I went to prison and I was there for another 3.5 years. And I had all kind of thoughts running through my mind. I didn't know what doors would open up. I didn't know what I'd do when I got out and all this, but I know I love working with dogs and training dogs. And I definitely wanted to do something like that. Well, you know, once I got out, you know, there was a dog shelter right down the street from here. And I walked over to them and I started talking to them and I said, hey, you know what? I'm going to come over here and help you guys if you guys need some training over here, you know, because I've got a pretty good bit of experience training dogs that have troubled or, you know, basic obedience. And, you know, I think I could help you guys out with no charge, you know. And I started doing that. I started going there once, twice a week and working with them and showing them. And before too long, they started wanting to pay me. They started saying, look, you know, we're getting a lot of good feedback. Other people that we've talked to about you, they're wanting you to go out and train their dogs. So I started getting phone calls from people that the owners of this dog shelter were recommending, you know, to me. And so I started going out to their home and I started working and training the dogs and they started paying me. And I said, you know what? I think God's making this happen for me. I'm gonna start trying to pursue this. So I started developing and creating a website. I started, you know, talking to them about my book, selling my book. Came up with some business cards and started advertising on Yelp, Google, Apple Maps, and it just started getting bigger and bigger. And before I know it, I'm the owner of a business called Trouble to Train, where I go out and work and get to train dogs every day. It's pretty cool.
Well, I bought your book and your book is awesome. So I would say anybody, you can buy it on Amazon, Trouble to Train. It's a great book. The way that you write it, it just seems very, it's easy to understand, you know, anyway, I wanted to ask, what was the scariest incident you had when you were learning how to train?
I would say getting bit, especially by the big dogs, the little dogs. I mean, they might hurt a little bit, but the big dogs that had, you know, a mean bite to them, I would say that.
So have you been bit quite a bit?
I've been bitten a few times. I would say worst case bites, only one really, really bad case. And that was actually recently. It wasn't while I was in the jail dog program. I didn't really have too many severe bites in there. I had a lot of nicks and little, you know, little things come up, but nothing that was extreme. Only one extreme case, and it actually just happened about a month ago.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and it was working with an aggressive dog, and you know, it redirected on me and it got me. But like I told the owners, you know, I stayed real positive. I said, look, you know what? Let's not give up on them. You know, let's continue work. It happens, you know, it happens. So.
Well, and that's what I hear. Like I watched Cesar Millan for years and years. And I mean, what, he was like 20 years in when he got bit by that golden retriever. And that was like one of the worst bites he'd ever gotten. So,
I guess
it's just sometimes you just don't even think, okay, this is the one that's going to be, be the worst. Can you tell us what's a day in the life, the routine of a handler when you're in the program?
In the jail dogs program?
Yeah.
Well, when I was there, it was, you know, we'd get up in the morning and we had separation dogs come out first. And, you know, we'd work with the separation dogs for an hour outside, with whether it was walking them, training them, whatever it was we needed to do that day with them. And then come 9 o'clock in the morning, they'd bring out the regular dogs. And then the regular dogs that, you know, that would come out, people would work with them and walk them, do the same thing with them. But they would have separation and regular dogs come at different times because the separation dogs obviously had either bad behavior, they were aggressive, or they were kind of dangerous, you know. And so they kept them separated when I was in there. But our goal was to keep them on separation for a little while, work with them, train them, spend that extra time with them, and eventually, as soon as we could, get them off separation mixed into the regular dogs. So once we did that, you know, come about 1 o'clock after we went on lockdown, we'd come back out, we'd train, we'd work with them again, walk them, play with them, and then, you know, and then we'd go eat dinner, lock down again, from what I remember. And then would come out again, I think about 7 o'clock with our dogs and, you know, hang out all the way to about 10:30 at night. I think that's the way it went. And we would train on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Trainer would come in off the street and, you know, we'd all get together in groups and would do either fun activities or we would do, you know, some real serious talks, you know, whatever needed to be done for what was going on.
One of those dogs, one of those separation dogs, I'm assuming was this dog here, right? Sonia?
Yes.
She was one of those separation dogs. Mm-hmm. Is Sonia, is she the one that inspired you to write the book?
I don't know if she's the one that inspired me. It was really, I'll tell you where the idea came. I was on the phone with my mom, you know, I was talking to her and we were just talking about everything going on. And I was telling her about the, you know, positive stuff that was going on in the dog pod and everything. And as I'm on the phone with her, I looked to my, left side and I saw the book cart sitting there. And I think our conversation was about, you know, I'm thankful that, you know, I'm able to be in this position and being able to do this. And I want to be able to share with people, you know, the knowledge I've gained and help them. And in that kind of conversation, I looked to my left, I seen that book cart and it just hit my mind. I asked my mom, I said, how hard do you think it'd be to write a book? And she told me, she said, it's not hard. She's done it before. She's done it in the past. And I said, wow. And then I just started thinking about it, you know, because on those phone calls, you only get 15 minutes and then you've got to pay to have another one. But just in a few minutes of thinking, I said, I think I might want to do that. You know, let me think about it. And if it's you saying it's possible, maybe we could do it. And she said she's willing to help me. So I got off the phone with her. I thought about it that night. I said, yeah, I really like to do this. So that's really where the idea came from. It just hit my mind, you know.
And you were at the Gwinnett County Detention Center when you wrote the book. Is that right?
Yes, I was there. And I knew it was going to be a little difficult because I was an inmate and I was there and I didn't have access to anything, you know, other than a pen and paper. So what I did was I'd go to my cell on lockdown and I started getting a bunch of paper and a bunch of pencils. And I just started writing it page by page, you know, and I'd get enough pages lined up. I put them in an envelope and take them to the deputy and ask them to mail them home for me. And they'd send it to the post office or they'd send it out. And then it'd get home and my mom would open the letter and, you know, read through it. And then she'd type it up and just made it happen that way. You know, it took a lot of time. It took a lot of phone calls saying what I wanted the cover to look like, you know, odd and end stuff, all that. But she was there for me. And I'm thankful for that because she helped it make it come alive, you know.
You got a pretty good mom. I would definitely say that. That was really awesome. And a lot of the topics that you cover are just like the absolute basic things that people run into. I know my dog, and I'm one of the worst as far as like, I'm pretty good with knowing when a dog needs to be left alone. You know, I volunteered at the animal shelter at Gwinnett County, and I volunteered with the jail dogs program, just like at events and stuff like that. But there's certain things that even I, like my dog, Sam, he's a foster fail border collie. I don't know if you've worked with any of those.
Mm-hmm, I do.
Well, I had no idea. He's such a beautiful dog and he had been shot and he has a permanent injury, but he's still a border collie. So a lot of the times I feel sorry for him and I will let him do things that I shouldn't, like jump up. And my husband, he does not do this to my husband, but he does it to me.
Oh, I jumped up on you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I was reading your chapter and I was like, oh, yeah, this is everything I'm doing wrong. This is exactly what I'm doing wrong. I have to be more the leader with him for sure. And, you know, and I'll be telling other people stuff. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm doing this.
Right. Yeah. But, yeah.
I love that chapter. And you also talk about the fear of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I know so many people that have a fear of dogs and I'll always tell them, cause I've heard animal control officers at the shelter say you should never run from a dog. And I always tell my friends too, that are afraid of dogs, tell your kids, don't run. And you lay that out. Don't run. Don't smile at them. Don't make eye contact. If you come across an aggressive dog, I wondered, how would you feel about going to schools? Do you think there should be a program like that where they go to schools? Do you think that would help prevent so many kids that do get attacked out on the street by stray dogs because they don't know what to do?
Yeah, I think it would be. I mean, I don't know if it'd be good to have it in actual schools. I mean, it probably would. But, you know, I think everybody should understand and know that, you know, and it wouldn't take long to be able to tell somebody, you know, just a few minutes, you know, just a few minutes of a good lesson to say, look, you know, if you ever come in contact with a dog, this is what you should do and this is what you shouldn't do, you know, most definitely, because I mean, we teach our kids going through school, you know, hey, look both ways before you cross the street, you know, all these other stuff that apply to life. That's very important. That's a very important life lesson too. And it should be taught.
I always, because it's always sad to me whenever it'll be, you know, they always pit bull attacks, a pit bull this, a pit bull that. And I know from being with them, a lot of times pit bulls have strong prey drives. And you mm-hmm. run and that kicks that prey drive into gear sometimes, especially right. if they're out and they're scared and they don't know where they're at. And I always think to myself, maybe if you'd stand still and not run,
yeah,
that maybe the attack either it wouldn't have happened or it wouldn't have escalated to where, you know, they get mauled or something.
And I mean, it, not just pit bulls now, it can be any breed of dog.
Sure.
And it's kind of like you're going against your own nature in a way, because if you see something scary, your instinct tells you get out of there. Don't be around it. Run. You see a bear, you see whatever it is, you know, and you just want to get out of there. But then that triggers something else, you know. But it's very important. If you come in contact with a dog that you're not comfortable with and you're just minding your own business, walking down the street, you know, whatever the case is, the last thing you want to do is just take off running from it. You know, you just want to stay calm. You want to stay like it's not even bothering you, even though inside you're probably worried to death and it's driving you scared, but just stay calm. Don't mind it. Just, you know, last thing you want to do is take off running. And like you were saying, try not to make eye contact, so it's not like a challenge to it. Don't be smiling at it where it shows teeth, you know, all that stuff. And it's going to help.
Yeah. And I I'm a pit bull lover. I love them. I mean, it's like my favorite breed of dog, but it's just like they get vilified, I think, so much in the media that they'll always, it could be. So what, maybe it was a Chihuahua that tore your ankles off, but they won't bother putting that up there, which to me, Chihuahuas, those are the most dogs that have snapped and bitten me over my time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, then they can be kind of crazy. Yeah.
Well, you know, this is primarily a pop culture podcast, so yeah, I've always have to ask, out of the movies that you've seen, what would you say, for somebody who hasn't really experienced what it's like to be in jail or prison, what movie would you say most accurately portrays that you know of?
I would say the movie Convicted. It's based on a true story. It was in the 90s, it's a pretty good movie, and it kind of relates to what it's like for someone to be in that situation in there, and also for someone who's on the outside, like family members, what they're going through, because it's not just the person that's in prison or in jail that's suffering. It's also the family that's on the outside. So there's a lot of good prison movies out there, but I would say, to answer your question, the most accurate or most close to being accurate would be Convicted.
I never even heard of that movie.
Yeah, it's not a mainstream movie, I don't think. I don't even know if it made theaters, but it is good. It's based on a true story, and it's about somebody who was who went to prison, and his sister, they saw that they didn't have a good attorney, and he got hammered, like he got life in prison, and the judge just really did him bad. And so the movie's about his sister saying, okay, we couldn't afford a good attorney. The attorneys in this area aren't any good. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to first get my GED, because she didn't have even a high school diploma. I'm going to get my GED. Then I'm going to go to law school, and I'm going to apply. And you see this whole 8 to 10 years of his sister working and going through all this stuff, and new evidence starts coming in, all this stuff. And then, was able to, you know, eventually get him out of there. And it's a good inspirational movie, I think, good and positive, you know, but it relates to the question you asked more accurate than most anyone I've ever seen.
All right. I'm definitely going to check that out. What would you say was your best memory as a handler in the Jail Dogs program?
Oh, wow. I got so many of them, you know. You know, that there was a quote that goes, do the best where you are with what you have. And every day it was something to try to be thankful for and be positive about. I mean, I got so many good memories of being able to work with dogs and people, and the difference was being able to make in other people's lives. I like to think of myself as a pretty good leader when I was there at the program. When I was there, there were sub trainers. So there were, I was a sub trainer and I had the responsibility over the other inmates and the other dogs. And I gained a lot of respect, and people, I was able to teach them and able to lead them. And one thing I learned is a good leader leads from the back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you're only as strong as your weakest link. So a lot of people that were struggling and a lot of people that just, were having a hard time understanding and involved with it, I was able to help pick them up and show them the way. And there was a lot of good order, working with the deputies and the other trainers that were coming in. It was all good. It was all positive.
That's great. That's really great. I wanted to ask you, since you've been training dogs that are people's personal dogs, I would imagine now a lot of these dogs, they've had them since they were puppies. A lot of these dogs probably haven't had rough lives. Other than the one that chomped you real good last month, do you feel like it's easier for the most part training these dogs that have had cushy lives versus the dogs that came into the program?
it can be a little bit easier just because a lot of people, they just want their dogs to do the basic obedience. So that I would say is 70% of what I'm doing, showing people how to teach them to listen, sit down, stay, relax, come, leave it alone, all that stuff. And then when I get that 30% call of the, my dog is aggressive or this and that, then it's like I spring to action, like, all right, here we go, And it's only because of what the jail dog program gave to me. We did have a lot of aggressive dogs in there, and I took it upon myself to want to be able to help them and want to learn what I needed to do, because they would have a 3-bite rule. This was when I was there. And that was if they bit 3 times or bit 3 different people, they'd have to put them down. And when they would hit that 2nd bite, I had to be real careful. I didn't want them to have that. I didn't want them to get put down. So I would try to do everything I could to try to help them and get through that. And, it was amazing because we had a lot of them that were able to get adopted out that way. And so it was the program that showed me and helped me to learn this. And that's why now when I get that 30% call like that, it's good because what I learned at the jail dog program.
Did you ever see there was some guys that wanted to be in the program and you just knew I don't think you're going to be cut out for this.
Those guys every once in a while, you do. And it's easy. Everybody can tell, pretty fast if someone's going to be on board or not, because it's a team effort and you're only as strong as your weakest link. And if you've got somebody in there that just doesn't like it, doesn't want to do it, they're just there for the free ride and they're not there for the dogs. No one, especially that's been in that program and as a part of that program, it's like an irritation and that no one wants that involved with it, And so, right. You would get that every once in a while. And obviously, the deputies, once they're aware of it, it's in having a good structure like that, having everybody on board and a good team, the deputies like it too, because it's a good environment, it's less stress on their day, on their job and all that. So if they get somebody that comes in that's just not with it and either might cause problems or whatever the case is, they don't think twice about, getting them out. So,
yeah. Earlier in the episode when I talked to Lori, she was telling me that one of the toughest things for the handlers to deal with when they get out is going back into the same environment.
Right.
And how it kind of fosters the crime or whatever it was that landed him in the jail in the first place. And she said it seems to be one of the main reasons that she'll see a handler come back again, which she said it does happen. They come back and then a couple of weeks, they just put them back in the program. So that's what I was going to ask you. Do you kind of echo those sentiments?
Yeah, that can be true because as for me, I grew up in Buford, right down, it's right next to Martinsville. And I grew up there my whole life. And that was kind of my old ball field, you know, that was where I, that's where I got into trouble. That's where I had a lot of, like I said, with my childhood, that, you know, it wasn't all that great. So I had a lot of that stuff involved there. And, you know, I wanted to be able to start new because I've never really been able to go to a new place, live somewhere new and have a fresh start in life like that. And now I do because I live in Tennessee now. And, you know, I've moved away from that, you know, that old street. And, you know, so the people that I'm involved in my life now are really successful people. You know, I've got friends that are business owners, people that own hotels. You know, I've heard a saying before, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. So when I got here and I started, you know, developing relationships and started to meet people, you know, I wanted to be able to be around good, positive, strong, successful people. And that is going to help me, you know, advance to the next level. And so that's what I started doing, you know, and it is possible. I would say, if you did have to go back to your old street, it can be done, but it's not what's the best thing to do. If you have a chance to start fresh, start new somewhere like that, like what I've done, so far it's been working great for me. And I'd say definitely, you know.
And recently, just this past spring, you actually came back to the jail and gave a talk and spoke to some of the inmates. Did you not recently?
Yes, I did. And it was very good. You know, I was glad to be able to do that. And, you know, my message was, you know, you can do it. You've got to make up your mind while you're here, you know, make up your mind while you're here that you want to change, that you're tired of this lifestyle. And, you know, it's going to be hard, but you don't give up, you know, whether you were involved with drugs, alcohol, whatever the issue was, you've got to take that option off the table 100%, because what I started realizing and started seeing was people that were coming back to prison or back to jail. What was going on was they'd get out. They were expecting everything to go good. I can't wait to get out. Can't wait to get home. All this is going to be good. And then disappointments come. Curveballs in life start happening. All negative things just come up. And it's how are you going to deal with it? Well, if they haven't made up their mind to take that option off the table, like I was just telling you about, and they go right back to it, then they fall right back into that same vicious cycle, and it brings them right on back, you know. So like I told them, I said, you've got to take that option, make up your mind now that whatever it is, whatever brought you here, whatever's going on, no matter what, good, bad, it's got to be gone.
Do you feel like it resonated with some of the guys there?
I think it did. Even if it just did one person, then it makes me happy, you know?
Well, I don't know if you knew this. This is a recent thing, but you've heard of the program Pitbulls and Parolees.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you knew this, but Lori said that Tia Torres is just recently contacted with the Jail Dogs and said that she's willing to any of the handlers that graduate from the program and they get out, that she'll pay for them to come to New Orleans and give them a job there and put them up and give them a 30-day probationary period just to kind of get them out of that environment, to let them start someplace completely new. And
yeah,
which I think is incredible. And I wondered if your operation ever got so big, would you ever be willing to do that for a handler at the jail?
Most definitely, you know, and I mean, I'm willing to do that type of stuff for free, no matter what, you know. I mean, just like me going back to the jail, I wasn't asking for anything. I'm wanting to help and I'm wanting to give back and I want people to succeed. That's my thing, you know. I want to help lift people up and show them, you know, it can be done. And whatever advice needs to be given, I want to be able to help. And so if I got to a point, like let's say my business keeps growing and it gets to that, you know, oh, you bet. You bet. I definitely would, you know, for sure.
That's awesome. Well, we like to do this thing at the end and it's kind of like a silly thing and we call it final questions. What it is basically, if this was your final day on earth, okay, you knew that, you knew this was your last day, what would be your last dessert?
I just say a regular old milkshake.
Oh, okay. What flavor?
Vanilla, probably.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's a classic. Nobody's going to turn out a vanilla milkshake.
Hey, look, it's my last day. It doesn't have to be exotic, just give me regular old milkshake.
Well, what would be the last movie you'd watch?
Oh, I would say A Knight's Tale.
Oh, that's a good movie. Oh, Heath Ledger, gone too soon.
Yeah.
So you're exiting the stage, you're going into the light. What's the last song that's playing as you leave?
I like Christian music. I do. And so I'd say any of Zach Williams, and I would say if it was country music, Luke Combs, any of it, you just do a random shuffle and let it pick one.
Okay. Something happy and uplifting, I guess. Thank you so much for talking to me. Can you tell us what part of Tennessee are you in? If somebody wanted to come and have their dog trained.
I'm in Wallen, Tennessee. It's right next to Maryville. And, my business is open Monday through Sunday, because like I learned at the JETA program, training can be every day. Every day you can do something. My website is troubletotrain.com. You can visit the website. You can check out, a lot more. You can get a little bit more information about how I do things and a little bit more understanding about the business and all that. But that's where I'm at, over here in Wallen, Tennessee.
Well, thank you so much, Shane. And I wish you all the best and that things just keep getting better and better for you. I don't see how they couldn't. You have such an incredible attitude, and it's very inspiring to anybody that would see this. So I really appreciate it.
All right, Steph, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thank you so much.